Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome to Hollywood and Levine. I am Ken Levine, your podcast host. This is part two of my two-part interview with Rich Fields, who for 7 years was the announcer on The Price is Right. And this week, we talk a lot about Bob Barker, and we talk a lot about Drew Carey. So if you're kind of interested in game shows, this is really the episode for you. And if you missed part one after you listen to this, go back and check that out. So here we go, part two with Rich Fields this week on Hollywood and Levine.
So I get back to Palm Springs and, again, almost a week goes by. I don't hear a thing from anybody after walking out of that dark studio. And I want to call every day. I want to call. And every time I'd pick up the phone, I'd think, no, one more day. Give them one more day. Don't be so anxious. I knew they were auditioning other people, you know, and I didn't want to be too in their face and have them go, we don't want that around the show. You know what I mean?
Right.
We want to hire.
This guy's a nudge. Yeah.
So I waited and I waited and I waited. And about 10 days went by. And Roger called me up and he said, hi, Rich. I said, hi, Roger. He said, look, Mr. Barker loved what you did the week of the shows that you did with us. He said, would you be willing to come back and do one more week with Mr. Barker on the air? I said, of course. When? And this was on a Friday. And he said, can you do Monday? Can you come back Monday and do Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday again? And in my head, I was like, oh, my God, what am I going to do with these people at CBS2 now? I just took a week's vacation. What do I tell them now? You know what I mean? Oh, God. So I said, yes, Roger, I'll be there Monday. He said, well, don't you have to talk with the people? I mean, it was Roger who said it out loud. Yeah. Well, don't you have to talk with your bosses and managers at CBS2 and get them up? I said, indeed, I do, Roger. But regardless of what happens in that conversation, I will be at The Price is Right on Monday morning. He said, well, okay. So I immediately got on the phone to my news director and had her three-way telephone call with the GM. And I said, look, I need to talk with both of you. Something has come up. It's very important. And can I see you both face to face? And they were like, well, let's do tomorrow morning at blank. And so that next morning I went into them and I said, hey, that week that I was out on vacation, I said, I want you to know, I said, I was actually in Hollywood auditioning for Bob Barker as his new announcer on The Price is Right.
They were probably stunned.
This uncomfortable pause. And I thought to myself, oh no, because can these people hold their life in my hands? I had a 3-year contract with them.
Right.
If they said no, my Price is Right over.
Right.
And one of them said, I think it was Erin Gahuli, the news director. She said, well, that's awesome. How'd you make that happen? And I talk about this in the book. I said right away in my head, I was like, she's freaking right. You know, I made this happen. You know, every step of the way, every phone call I made, every job I ever took, every course I ever studied. And I came back to reality, and I said, well, you know, I used to do a Mark Goodson game show down in the state of Florida. And when Rod Roddy passed away, I had called Goodson Productions. I kind of fibbed. I called Goodson Productions to give, you know, condolences, and asked what they were doing about the position. And all of a sudden, I find myself being invited to audition for Mr. Barker. I really sugarcoated over the entire process. I worked hard to get that audition. And they were like, yeah, yeah. So when did the show there? I said, well, the shows I just taped with Mr. Barker are coming up, and they're going to be right here on CBS2 in just a few days. Oh, that's fantastic, Rich. Well, good for you. And I said, well, here's part two. I said, I just got off the phone with the producer of the show, and they want me to come back and do another week's worth of auditions with Bob. And the GM looked up at me and he said, when? And I said, Monday. And this was on a Friday. And he looked at the news director, and she looked at the GM. And then the news director, God bless her, she said, hey, Rich, do you think they'd let you do your weather from Television City live from there? And we satellite it back to Palm Springs, and you just, you know, you'd be there at the Price is Right. You can show people, like, you know, the audience and games and stuff. And I'm thinking in my head, oh my God, please, you guys, this is going to huge wrench into things. Bob Barker's not going to want some rinky dink station weatherman on his stage, you know, or walking through his dressing room when he's not around. And please don't. And then the GM was like, yeah, that sounds great. Our viewers would love that. Can you ask him? And I was like, sure. I can, you know, I'll put in a phone call. And he was like, let's call him right now here. And he pulled his phone over, and I was like, oh no. So I dialed up Roger Dobkowitz's phone number at the Price is Right. And he answers the phone. I said, hi, Roger, Rich Fields. I'm here with my manager and my news director. And they want to know that during this upcoming week of auditions with Mr. Barker, if I could do my weather hits live from Television City. You know, the show would long be over by the time I was on at 4, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 11 o'clock. I said, you know, they'd like to know if I could do it from here. And he said, well, you guys bring in your own satellite truck. How do you want to do it? And we were just a brand new small station, Palm Springs. And the GM says, we don't have a satellite truck. And Roger says, we've got a couple here in the lot. Let me make some phone calls. Let me work this out. But yeah, we can do this, man. From what I thought was going to be the absolute door closer, all of a sudden, here, Roger's opening doors for me to get this done. And I go back to CBS2, or excuse me, Television City the next week. I do my auditions with Bob. I'm having a great time. I'm doing weather hits, you know, from the stage or from Young and the Restless, from the Craig Kilborn show, or from the roof, you know, playing basketball with Craig Kilborn. I did so many breaks from so many cool places there. The station ended up getting an Emmy Award for the 5 o'clock news during that ratings period. And the GM and the news director said, you know, sure, we have a great staff. We're putting out good content news-wise, but we believe it was the people were enthralled. You were taking them places they had never seen in their life. I took people down in the basement of Television City where there's the vault. It's called the vault, Ken. I don't even know if you know about it, but
I do. Yeah, I've been. Yeah.
But it's where they keep anything expensive, jewelry, cash, anything small that you could walk into, like a bank-sized vault and store, is in this vault down
below.
Yeah,
they kept Carol Burnett in there for a couple of years.
So I was taking them all kinds of places, and everybody was very happy with it. I got through the second week's worth of auditions without any hiccups, very few pickups, very few flubbed lines. And again, about a week to 10 days later, I'm all gussied up, suit and tie. We actually had weather in Palm Springs that day, Ken.
Oh, my God. That's the most unbelievable thing you've said so far.
Which, in layman's terms, it's a storm that comes over, and it's a strong downward burst of energy out of the storm. And the Coachella Valley is a huge agricultural center. I mean, it's some of the most fertile land. You wouldn't believe it because you'd think it's desert, but some of the most fertile land in California, and they grow everything that California exports in the Coachella Valley. I mean, from lettuce to carrots to avocado, everything. And so anyway, this massive downburst came, and it wiped out a huge agricultural farm there. I mean, big damage. It closed I-75 Is it 75 through the Coachella Valley? How quickly we forget. Yes.
Whatever. Yeah.
Closed the freeways for hours. It was a weather event for the Palm Springs area. And so I was going to lead the news that night at 11 o'clock. And I was in the newsroom. I didn't have my jacket on. It was one of those kind of casual shots. You know, I'm at my desk in the weather center and the camera's in the newsroom and the anchors are out on the thing. And they're going to start the show, you know, CBS 2 News, you know, 11 o'clock. Let's go right now to Richfield's in the weather center with what happened today. And so I'm all ready for that. I'm sitting at my desk. I'm doing some computer graphics. And the phone rings on my desk, Ken, and it's that line that's either your wife or the news director. Either one equally as important to answer. I looked up at the clock and it was 5 minutes to 11. I'm sorry, it was 6 o'clock newscast. It was 5 minutes to six. And that makes a difference in this story coming up here in a second. And so I answer the phone and it's my wife and she's kind of frantic, excited. She says, Roger Dobkowitz of The Price is Right just called the house and he wants you to call him right away. He needs you to call him before 6 o'clock. He's leaving. They're leaving town. They're going on a vacation and they're going to be gone. And I looked up at the clock. It's 4 minutes to six. So I hung up the phone. I dialed Roger Dobkowitz's number, you know, one ringy dingy, two ringy dings. I'm watching the second hand go around. I'm like, oh my God. He picks up the phone. Hello. I said, hi, Roger. I said, it's Rich Fields calling you back. Well, hi, Rich. How are you? Roger just has a certain speech pattern. It's very easy and nothing is fast. And I'm trying to hurry things up because I'm watching that secondhand. And I said, good. I'm good. Good, Roger. I'm seconds away from going on the air out here live in Palm Springs at CBS 2. He gets the gist. Oh, I just have one question for you. And I was like, oh, shoot. You know, I thought it was going to be something of meat.
Yeah.
I said, what's that? And he goes, well, how would you like to be the announcer on The Price is Right? I said, well, of course, Roger, two minutes before. Of course, Roger, that's why I'm going through the entire process here with you. And he says, no, I'm offering you the job. Have you ever fainted? Have you ever fainted?
No, you actually fainted?
As close as it can be without hitting the floor. And folks that have fainted, let's see if this jives with you. All of a sudden, blood rushing in my head, I've found out, created this whooshing noise in my ears. Like, it was the weirdest thing. Then my vision from full vision started to close off. Now, blackness out here, and it was closing off into a little pinlet of light. And I had a stand-up desk at the time, and I'm standing at the desk with the phone in my hand, and I felt my knees buckle, and I see my vision go, and I put my hands down on my desk to grab myself, and I dropped the phone, and I kept myself from hitting the ground, and I actually inhaled. I didn't know it, but I wasn't breathing, and as soon as I did that, from a pin light, my vision started coming back, and I realized where I was. I picked up the phone, and I said, hey, hi, Roger. I said, yeah, my God, thank you. Thank you so much. He said, are you okay? Because he heard the phone.
Right.
I said, I damn near fainted, brother. He laughed. He goes, well, Mr. Barker, I want you to know, I got to make the phone call, but Mr. Barker handpicked you from over 200 applicants and nearly 7 or 8 that got live auditions with Mr. Barker. He's picked you and he's proud to have you on the team. And so am I. Ken, it was like hitting the lottery in all ways. All of a sudden, you know, money wasn't an issue anymore. Just everything. It was like, oh my God, it was like, you know, your dreams come true. And I hung up the phone with Roger and I stood there a second. And in my IFB, you know, remember, I'm ready to go. I'm ready for that. I got my mic on. I got my IFB in my ear. And for folks out there, IFB is the system.
Thing in your ear. Yeah.
Yankers, anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat there a second and I heard in my IFB from the director, all right, talent out on the floor. We're scrapping the first story with Rich. We're going right to the second story about the mall shooting in San Diego. Stand by. Here we go. The new announcer of The Price is Right will not be with us tonight in the A block. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Music stuff starts flying. Mm-hmm. CBS 2 News at 6 mm-hmm. o'clock. Now, here's, you know, Trish O'Shea. And I was like, oh, my God, they heard the whole freaking thing. Can they? here's my end. They heard Roger's end of the conversation all through my microphone. Everybody in the booth heard it. Producers, directors, writers, everybody. And the director of the show, John Gahuli, happened to be the husband of the news director, Aaron Gahuli. And I knew that she already knew, you know, that I got the job. And I was just like, I couldn't believe it. And in my ear, he said, hey, man, take a couple moments, you know. We'll get back to you when we need you. And I was just so dumbfounded by what just happened. It was like a dream. I couldn't get myself out of the feeling of this couldn't have just happened. But with every breath, I realized I'm in the CBS 2 newsroom. I'm in the desert. I'm right where I was getting ready. Jesus, I got to get ready for my next weather hit. I got to get this Price is Right thing out of my head because I owe these people now. You know what I mean? I really wanted to give them everything I could in whatever remaining time I had with them. I didn't know if I was going to have to do them both at the same time, be the weatherman out in Palm Springs and do the Price. I didn't know what was about to happen, but
ultimately happen?
Well, CBS, the network, got involved with the ownership of KPSP in Palm Springs. And the ownership, they weren't trying to keep me from Price is Right at all. But you know that in syndication, you buy certain shows,
mm-hmm.
your stations. And so I think Dr. Phil and something else, they gave this affiliate in Palm Springs quite a few things as a give back to let me out of my contract with them because they were going to lock me up.
Right.
The network was going to lock me up and I wasn't going to be able to do anything else. I found out. And so to make a long story short, you know, goodbye party and brand new set of golf clubs later, I was, you know, looking for an apartment in somewhere in Los Angeles to be the new announcer of The Price is Right.
Let's talk about Bob Barker now. On YouTube, you can find this. Somebody has unearthed the very first time that Bob Barker was ever on television, and it was his first day hosting Truth or Consequences back in like 1956. And you watch this video, and Ralph Edwards, who had created the show and had been the host of the nighttime version, now NBC was going to do a live daytime version, and it was live at that time. So he comes out at the beginning of the show and he says, we have a new host. We have auditioned 200 people, an extensive search, yada, yada. And he says, and last week I was driving around and I heard this guy on a radio station, a crappy radio station, by the way, KGFJ with a horrible signal. And he said, that guy sounded interesting. And I invited him to come in. And that guy got the job. And I want to introduce him to you now, Bob Barker. And Bob Barker comes out. And he and Ralph chat for a few minutes. Again, this is his first time on any television, much less national television. And after a few moments of chit-chat, Ralph hands him the microphone and says, okay, do the show. And Bob brings out a couple of contestants. And I was stunned at how comfortable and polished and at ease and joking with the contestants. And I thought, oh my God, this is his first day and he's on live television. The amount of poise that he exhibited that first day was absolutely phenomenal. What was it like working with him? And did he ever talk about those days? And did he ever talk about that first day?
I made him talk about those days. I was born in 1960. So as a youngster, my mom and dad used to watch Truth or Consequences. So I would sit and watch Truth or Consequences as well. And You know, I don't know where my intuition or premonition of working with Bob came from, but I recognized then as a little kid watching this guy that he had a certain personality that was perfect for this screwy game show. I didn't watch the show so much for the weird situations that contestants were put in that they had to get out of, but I watched it for because of Bob. And, you know, here was this young, handsome, debonair guy, very well spoken, and had a quick wit, not an acerbic wit, just a quick wit, and made anything laughable and funny. And so I would make Mr. Barker talk about those days. I would bring that up to him about Truth or Consequences days, and he would always wrap the entire conversation around his love for Ralph Edwards and that he owed Ralph everything, and that up to the day he died, even on his deathbed, the anniversary came around of the day Ralph handed that microphone to Bob. You're talking about that first show, and I forget the time of the day. I think it was 12 noon that him and Ralph Edwards decided that on that anniversary day at 12 noon, they would both have lunch every year and toast that. And Bob made sure that happened every single year for 50 years until Ralph died. And as a matter of fact, Bob told me on Ralph's deathbed, the anniversary came around and Mr. Barker snuck in a bottle of wine to the hospital and two glasses, and him and Ralph Edwards toasted for the last time. Wow. Chokes me up to think about it, but just so cool. Just so reverent.
Mm-hmm.
To Ralph Edwards. So that's what he talked about the most. Early days of Price is Right, sure. We talk about stuff like that. We talk about blunders or mistakes or Johnny. We talked about, I'd talk to him about Johnny a lot. I knew that he and Rod had a falling out there in the latter years. So I tried to stay away from too much conversation about Rod because I didn't know how he still felt about Rod. They had a big falling out about money and some other things. And Bob changed his opinion of Rod, and that's when Rod was taken off the air visually, you know, no more shots of Rod and just all kinds of stuff was happening. So I always kept my conversations kind of away from Rod, but I talked about everything else. And Bob was happy to talk about it. I mean, he pointed out a number of times that I was the exact same age as he was when I got my job at Price, when he got his job with Ralph Edwards. And I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. Well, you know, maybe there's time for me yet, you know. Because not only did I, you know, my quest was twofold. Not only did I want to be Bob Barker's announcer on The Price is Right. Reason why I wanted that so bad, Ken, was because I wanted to learn from the master. I wanted to host The Price is Right. I wanted to be there the day that he retired and be considered to be his replacement. And that didn't pan out. You know, other forces came in at the end of Bob's reign and the beginning of Drew Carey's reign. And I told you about them sanitizing the show of anything Bob with the new crew, and they wanted to make it Drew Carey's show. So me getting an audition for Bob's job was absolutely out of the question. The number one thing was they were like, look, we looked through so many people to get you. We're not changing out the voice again. You're staying right where you're at. And that was kind of crushing. Mr. Barker at one point, we're still recording shows with Bob and we're going through auditions with, you know, new people, George Hamilton, Mario Lopez, all these people coming into audition. And we're walking out one day and Bob says to me, how are the auditions going? I said, well, you know, they are what they are, Bob. Nobody's a Bob Barker. And he laughed and I said, Bob, you know, they've got so many nobodies coming in. It's embarrassing. I've heard that. And I said, you know, Mr. Barker, nobody knows this show better than you, than me. And he looked at me right away and he said, and? And I said, what do you think about asking the production company for an audition? I think you should. I said, really? You just said it. Nobody knows this show better than you right now. You're the next best thing they've got. And I was like, oh my God. I'm walking past the dumpsters with Bob out to our cars because we parked up back because they didn't want people to see us when we walked in. And I thought, my God, Bob Barker just freaking knighted me. And I went home, I told my wife, and she was like, you know, you've been talking about pressing this issue of getting an audition. Maybe this is the time. And so I did. I went into not the producers of the show. I went to the production company. I went to the showrunner. And for folks that may not know, the showrunner, there's all the people that work on the show, you know, in Price's instance, then there's, you know, the host, and then there's producers, and there's executive producers, and then there's the showrunner. And so I went to got a meeting with the showrunner at his office in Santa Monica at the time, and I sat with him, and I won't use his name because I've got other stories later about him that aren't so nice. But I said, look, I said, I know you turned me down once, but just give me an audition. Just look at what I can do. Watch what I can do. I said, I'm not a Bob Barker clone. I'm not going to do exactly as Bob Barker did. I said, I'm going to keep the consistency and continuity of the show from Bob to a new host. I think I'm your next best chance of hanging on to the viewership that we have. And I know the show. I know the show back and forth. I know every nuance of every game. Not only have I watched it since I was old enough to have eyeballs on a TV, I said, now I've worked with Bob for 3+ years and have learned it so much more about timing, about every segment having a clock to it, every game, every contestant that comes up, there's a clock running. You know, Bob, they tell him beforehand, before they come out of commercial, Bob, you got 12 minutes for the next segment. 12 minutes, very good. Okay, Rich, what's the next name on your list? Bob, it's so-and-so, come on down. And so four, the bidders roll up and make their one bid. This is all, clock's still running, make their one bid and the actual retail price. It's you, the clock's ticking. All right, now we get to the big game they're going to play. He's got 8 minutes or whatever to do this. And Bob was a master at bringing that show in on frickin' time, every single segment. He would hurry people. He'd know in his head. He had like a disc jockey brain. He knew that if he had on a song that was 3 minutes and 23 seconds, he knew when it was 3 minutes and 20 seconds. I mean, he would bring it in and he would hurry people through games even in a comedic way to get it done on time. And then boom, we'll be back right after these messages. Camera goes to black and Bob would turn around and go, how'd I do? Bob, you brought it in 2 seconds early. All right. Excellent. Thanks. I mean, and so I knew that. I knew how to do that. I knew how to keep production costs down by doing that, keeping the show on time. It's less editing. Everything costs money there. Not only does the editing room downstairs cost money, the dude down there in the room costs money, you know, and then the producer to sit there with him costs money. The time to go, okay, and act three, such and such, make this edit. You know, there's just so much involved. If Bob brings it in on time, guess what? There's no extraneous cost. And I knew how to do that. And I was confident I can do that. And they just shut me down. 100% no. It's not going to happen, Rich. Give it up. And I told Mr. Barker about that at a later date after he had left the show. He asked me about it. And I said, Bob, I went to the showrunner and he turned me down. And Bob did not like the showrunner. Bob hated that guy. And he had a few expletives and he said, look, Rich, all I can tell you is just keep on plugging away. It'll happen. And so I thought that meant, okay, stay on the show. Something may happen with the new host and maybe then you'll get a shot. And, you know, lo and behold, they get Drew Carey in there, somebody that's never done a game show, never watched The Price is Right in his life. And he's proud of it. He's on the internet a billion times saying, I never watched Price is Right. You know, so, and I asked Drew, you know, somewhere in the first 3 years, I was like, Drew would tell me constantly, as a comedian, the last thing I wanted to end up doing was finding myself in my career going down the toilet as a game show host.
Why did he take the job? They paid him a fortune. They just rolled the Brinks truck up to the back of his house.
I said, Drew, why'd you take the job? He said, they just kept throwing money at me. I turned them down 4 times. He said, I was on a car trip out in the Outer Banks of the Carolinas. They were calling me every day, and every day it was going up in the millions every day. 3 million one day, 5 million the next day, 10 million the next day. He goes, it was like the cosmos telling me I had to do this. And now I think he does enjoy the show, although he's very flippant about it off camera still, but money, money,
what was it like in his early days? I mean, that must have been rough.
Very. It was very rough. We had a week or two of rehearsals with Drew where we were there at Price is Right, no audiences, and we were literally going through full shows, fake contestants. You know, we had people, you know, in Bidder's Row, the whole nine yards. And we were getting ready to do another audition one day, and I was coming down out of my dressing room, and Drew is at the bottom of the stairs where my dressing room had been moved. And he says to me, "Hey, man," everything Drew says starts with, "Hey, man. Hey, man, you want to go to Vegas tonight? I got a private jet." He goes, "Look, I'm taking my niece and a bunch of her friends. The jet is full out of Van Nuys to Vegas. But if you can get to Vegas, I can bring you and your wife back on the jet. Come on, man, me and you. Let's go party. Let's go gamble, man." And so I said, yeah, done. So my wife and I went to Las Vegas, and we were staying at the Hard Rock with Drew. And Drew calls me up and he says, "Hey, man, meet me out at the pool. I've got the big cabana out there. You can't miss it. It's the largest one out there." He says, "You know, there's 100 cabanas, but this is the massive one. You can't miss it." Of course, Drew has the big cabana. And he goes, "Meet me out there. There's a couple of things I want to go through with you." So I get out there, and I think, you know, we're going to go swimming or something. He's like, "Man, what are you dressed like that for?" I said, "Oh, I thought, you know, maybe take a dip." "No, man, no, we're working. Come here." And he has a computer set up, and he's got a video screen there, kind of like a great big monitor. And he's got a CD player, and he's got CDs of Bob and the show and different games that are going to come up in his first week of real live shows. And he's like, "Here, man, you know, watch this with me, will you?" And so we're watching Bob do One Away or Punch a Bunch. I can't remember what the game was. And Drew was like, "Oh my God, he's so good. I don't know. What do I do?" I mean, he was like worried. He was like, "What did I get myself?" And I said, "Drew," he goes, how do I be successful at this, man? How do I do what Barker does? You know, you know, I'm enthralled. You know, I'm so involved watching him." He's never watched a show, but now he is. And he's like, I'm so invested watching him now. The guy sucks me right in. How do I do that? You know, Drew came from the Drew Carey Show or live audiences. Drew Carey Show, you know, it's probably a four camera shoot.
It was a four camera shoot. Yeah.
So, you know, with lines, and you know exactly what camera to look at or who to look at during what scene and so forth. He's like, I just don't know how he pulls people in. I said, "Well, you know, here's something Mr. Barker taught me." And this was a big, in my opinion, a big secret for me as the wannabe host of the show someday. He said, what? I said, "Well, here's what Bob told me. There's three audiences on this show, Drew, and you need to play to all three of them." "What do you mean there's three audiences on the show?" I said, "Well, you know, you got the audience out there in the pit." Yeah. I said, "You know, the 300 that waited to see you." Yeah. I said, "You've got the contestant that you're playing the game with. That's your second audience. So you're playing to them. You're playing to the people out there." I said, "And then you got the third audience right there, the folks at home. You need to round robin from da-da-da-da to da-da-da-da to what do you think he should do? Audience, what do you think he should do? How about you folks at home? You think it's that? I don't know. You know what I mean?" So Bob did this roundabout with, and that, according to Bob, was the secret sauce of involving everyone. He's pulled in the CBS viewers on TV. He's pulled in the audience there live with him to scream and yell. He's got this person excited out of their mind to win this prize. He's got models to throw to and show them that again. Let me see that. You know, so Bob looked at the entire studio as his playground. And hosts don't do that. You don't see hosts on the air doing that these days. Even Drew doesn't do it these days. You know, he kind of forgets. He kind of forgets. So sitting there at the Hard Rock with Drew in Vegas and going through particular games and literally, I won't say teaching Drew the games, but that's what it ended up being. I mean, I sat through 15, 20 games teaching Drew how to do the show. It was really rough. I mean, and none of those first weeks, months, years, I'll say, ever came in on time. There was nothing was shot in real time. Our shows went from 48, 49 minutes of actually shooting the show to a couple of hours when Drew got there. The crew didn't like it. Nobody liked it. CBS didn't like it. Fremantle didn't like it. It was more production costs all the way around. It was just, it didn't look like it was going to work. I mean, but they were hell bent on making it work. And they went through a lot. I mean, the show took a huge plummet after Bob left. I mean, the viewership just, it went to nothing. So.
Yet they kept him and he seems to be doing a good job.
And they kept the show. There's nothing on CBS in daytime. They've killed everything. The soaps are all gone. I think there's one left, you know? So it's a matter of really not having any programming that would beat the small numbers Price is Right was getting.
Well, you and Drew are both from Ohio. So I imagine you guys would get along. I knew Drew a little bit. We had a mutual friend, Sam Simon, the late Sam Simon from The Simpsons. And Sam would invite me and Drew over to his house to watch football. And I have to say, and this was during the Drew Carey Show days, nice guy, very regular guy, very low key. And of course, writers now revere him for what he did during the strike, where he paid for meals at two specific restaurants to anybody who was a writer.
Every time there's a strike in Hollywood, Drew does that.
Yeah. He was, for me, he was just a very nice, regular guy. What was he like to deal with for you?
Very nice, regular guy. Like you said, I mean, we both grew up, he grew up in Cleveland. I grew up just outside of Cleveland, a couple minutes. We're both the same age. I think Drew's a couple of months older than I. Both have the same backgrounds growing up, same sensibilities. We got along great right from the get-go. We became fast friends. And I mean, like you said, from being up at Drew's house to watch a football game or a late night movie or just to play, like a gaming night with his girlfriend and my wife or something like that, or going to soccer games with Drew. You know, he owns part of the Seattle Sounders. So we were constantly flying up there to see soccer games with Drew. And just, I mean, we went to Argentina together with Drew, my wife and I, and just a lot of, I mean, we did everything together. We did everything together for about 3 years.
Do you happen to know if Bob was happy with what he saw once he retired and got a chance to see the new guy?
It wasn't complimentary.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine. You talked about rehearsal. What was the process like? You would do your production meeting. What kind of rehearsal and how long a rehearsal would you do?
Rehearsals take about 45 minutes. It's the entire show from the one bids. One bids are the small prizes that you bid on contestants' row. From one bids all the way up to whatever's on stage to be given away, whether it's cars, cash, whatever it is. We'll go through the...
And you had phony contestants?
Stand and where exactly the cameras need to be, you know, blocking. We did it all on paper just minutes before in the production meeting. Now it's a chance to do it in real life in real time.
Okay, and then you bring in the audience and
yeah, then
the
we at the stage and give the CBS pages the cue to go ahead and start loading the audience. And during that time, we're all backstage. We're putting on our show clothes. We're getting our makeup on. We're getting our hair done. And about 15 minutes before the show's going to start, the announcer goes out and does his warm up and has some fun with the audience. Whips
so
him
that's
up
you.
Huh?
That's you going out doing the warm up. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I did about 15 minutes of stand up, you know, warm up, stand up. It's literally like a stand up comedy routine. At least it was for me. And, just having a lot of fun with the audience and telling them what they need to know before the show starts. and then soon as I get the cue to get off the stage, it's a matter of seconds that I have to get back to the podium, put my headphones on before the music starts playing. And the director's like, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, stand by. Here we go. Announce. He literally yells announce because the music's so loud.
Mm-hmm.
Here it comes from the Bob Barker studio at CBS in Hollywood, you know, and boom, now you're rolling, man. You're off and rolling and it's showtime. Here's the star of The Price is Right, Bob Barker! And those doors open and slam close, and he straightens up and walks through. And that's another thing. Bob had a very bad back and bad knees. It's why he retired. October 30th of 2006, the day before Halloween, he came into my dressing room and told me he's going to retire. And I was sick to my stomach, but I was trying to be up and buoyant for him because this was, you know, looked like a happy thing, I think, for him. And I said, Bob, why now? And he said, you know what, Rich? He said, I got out of bed this morning like I do every morning, and my back was killing me, and I put my leg over the side of the bed, and I got my second leg over the side of the bed, and I sat there, and I thought to myself, what am I doing this for? I'm killing myself. I can barely walk. I can barely stand up. I've been on the air now for freaking 49 years. Got nothing else to prove. I just think this is it. It's going to be a nice round number, 50 years. I think I'm done. So Bob had a horrible back this entire time. Remember this video of the Samoan lady bouncing him up and down?
Yeah. Oh, my God. It must have killed him.
That particular instance, this is according to Bob, sitting at his table, kitchen table at his house. That incident herniated a disc or two of his that he suffered with his entire life.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, I talk about getting back to the podium and starting the show. Now here's a star. The Price is Right. Well, as that's happening backstage behind the big doors, you would see Bob, and I'm going to do it in profile kind of sort of. So the big doors are in front of me. They haven't opened yet. And the announcer's out front. And now here's a star. The Price is Right. Bob's kind of hunched over and 83 ish. And now here's a star. The Price is Right. Bob Barker. And those doors would open up and he'd bull through it, man. No matter how his back hurt or how his knees hurt, he'd stand straight up just before them doors open, and he'd come through with vim and vigor, man. So God bless him. He did it as long as he could.
Along the way, you got a lot of reads, and you have to read very quickly. I'm sure you made any number of mistakes. Was Bob cool with that?
Oh, yeah. That it wouldn't affect Bob at all, because if I do flub something, do not stop. That was the number one key. You know, if I'm reading the copy and, you know, I don't know what it says. This, you know, 2000 Corvette Stingray has power steering, power brakes. Just keep going. Forget the, don't go back. Just keep going and keep the time that you're going to end up doing this in exactly the same. So to Bob, he didn't care because he knew it'd be picked up after the show and he didn't have to be there. And it didn't matter to Bob how many mistakes I made. But you know what? The more I did the show, I got to the point where I'd be doing a pickup maybe every two, three shows, one, two a week. I mean, I got pretty proficient at it because all the copy after a couple of years, all the copy is the same exact copy. I mean, the model of the car might be different. The year of the car might be different, but it's all the same copy. You know, Uniguest will fry round trip from Los Angeles aboard, you know, so it just becomes second nature and you get really good at it.
And finally, you were there for 7 years. I got to ask.
Plus,
why did you leave?
I had two contracts. I had 2 3-year terms. I got through the first three with Mr. Barker. He left. I was going to leave the show knowing I wasn't going to get a shot at the host job. I thought this thing's going to be an abomination, and I don't know if I want to be a part of that. You know, everybody was saying that the show's never going to be the same. You know, who wants to be involved with the death of the Price is Right? And so I was seriously considering leaving the show. And after a big meeting with the president of CBS Daytime and the showrunner up in CBS, third floor of CBS one day, they just impressed upon me how much they needed me to stay to be the conduit between the changeover. They wanted the voice to remain the same during the changeover from Bob to Drew. And the only thing they wanted different that first year was the host. They wanted everything to stay the same. They didn't want to make the big set changes they wanted to make yet. They wanted to try to hold the audience. And so I was supposed to be a part of that. So I did a second 3-year contract. And after that second 3-year contract was over, a new executive producer came in, a young, he thought he was such a hot shot. He was going to, you know, sanitize the show of anything that was Bob Barker and make this Drew Carey show, you know, And any reminder there was of Mr. Barker, they seemed to get rid of right away, starting with the producer of the show, Roger Dobkowitz, who'd been there for 35 some years, and Kathy Greco got let go. Everybody, they fired everybody. They totally cleaned house. This guy was so new and such a novice at what he was doing. He didn't want anybody around him to know that he made a mistake. So he didn't need anybody around him that knew better than him. You know, he didn't need anybody around him to go, Mike, you can't do that because the budget of the show by the end of the week's taping, it's going to end up, you know what I mean? It's just, so he convinced the production company not to renew me for a third term, that he was going to get Drew's improv buddies to be the announcer of The Price is Right, which was funny because by the end of my term, my 3 years with Drew, I was already on Drew Carey's Improvaganza doing improv in Las Vegas at the MGM with Drew. So, you know, here I was starting that little journey of doing improv with Drew. And now they want improv. I said, I can improv. I improv all the time. I did 40 years of radio. What do you think that is? That's improvising constantly all day, every day.
When you say Mike, I'm going to out him because that's Mike Richards, right?
Correct.
Okay. This, for people who don't know, is the same Mike Richards who was involved in the big kerfuffle at Jeopardy and was the guy who named himself host and lasted a grand total of 1 week. That's the Mike Richards that he's talking about. Yeah.
Ended up being blackballed from entertainment altogether because of something he said on a podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anti-Semitic remarks, if I remember.
Yeah. Lovely guy. Lovely Great. Guy. Real well, Rich, good luck with your book. Your book is The Price is Right, The Inner GPS. And
trust
again, it's a great story.
Yes, trust your inner GPS. That's what it's about.
Thanks so much. I don't have any parting gifts for you. I'm sorry.
That's funny. That's good. Hey, go to richfields.tv. All the info on the book is right there, richfields.tv. Thanks, Ken. Appreciate it, brother.
Thank you, Rich.
There you go, Rich Fields. Thanks as always for listening, and also thanks to Adam and Susie Meister-Butler, to John Wolfert, Howard Hoffman, Bruce and Jason Miller. If you want to get in touch with me, easy to do, HollywoodLevine@Outlook.com. That's my email address, HollywoodLevine@Outlook.com. I am on Instagram, Hollywood and Levine. You can see my New Yorker cartoons, and we are currently in a stretch of interesting interviews. Next week, here's a tease, we have a television pioneer who was a producer of a show that routinely got a 50 share. Okay, who could that be? Come back next week and find out. Thanks again for listening to
Hollywood and Levine.